New on Curiosity Stream, Darwin's Theory of Evolution, a scientific breakthrough, but 1920s Tennessee wasn't ready for it.
It became the Bible versus evolution.
Followed a heated trial that changed American education forever on Monkey in the Middle. And it's the country's deadliest highway.
There were something like 178 accidents in a two-year period.
Don't miss the most dangerous road in America. Watch now on Curiosity Stream. Annual plans are $20, just $1.67 a month. Visit curiositystream.com.
Title says it all. I don't care what the doctors, teachers, police, my parents, or anyone else in this backward-ass town says. There is no such thing as spontaneous human malnutrition. Hell, you probably haven't even heard of it. Well, no, of course you haven't heard of it. It's not real. Spontaneous human malnutrition? SHM? Those three letters didn't just ruin my last year of middle school. They've ruined my damn life. It's like every adult in town has gone mad. People don't just... They don't. Screw it. How do you even begin? It started during COVID lockdowns. It wasn't until the fifth or sixth case that the local news started putting the pieces together. That's 3 weeks after Grant and I started our investigation, BT Dubs. We knew something was up from the third victim. Why? Because the third victim was Doug's mom. Doug is... or was, the third member of our cafeteria loser musketeer setup. When his mom, when whatever SHM actually is, happened to her, she was in the background of our weekly D&D Zoom session. Doug was shaking dice and praying to the nerd gods for a critical when a weird noise came from his audio. It was barely half a second long, almost too quick to notice, but it was loud, like real loud. So loud that Doug jumped a few inches in his seat and dropped the dice. Grant and I never found out if Doug hit that crit. His blonde bowl cut whipped away from the screen before we heard the clattering of dice on polished wood. Me and Grant didn't really care too much about killing cave trolls anymore, though. Both of us were glued to the screen playing out in Doug's kitchen. The noise had come from Doug's mom. She'd stumbled into shot, clutching the kitchen sink. She was vibrating, not trembling. Not shaking, vibrating. The motion didn't seem to be coming from any of her muscles. It was rapid jolting like that caused by pneumatic tools rather than fits and convulsions. She'd fallen to the floor by the time Doug reached her, totally rigid and still juddering so fast that her form on my screen was barely more than a blur. From the angle, I couldn't see too much of what was going on. I saw Doug reach down to touch her. Heard him yelp in pain. Started yelling along with him when he recoiled and held up the stumps where his fingers had been. My speaker screeched at the moment he made contact, a horrible shrill grinding with a wet edge. The exact same noise Freddy Gruber's elbow made when he accidentally leaned on a power sander in wood shop back in sixth grade. Doug had no color left in his face. He wasn't aware of Grant and I yelling to him through our webcams either. His mom's ankles were still vibrating, the pace now so rapid that a cloud of sawdust started billowing from the floorboards beneath her. We were all screaming, Grant and I in terror, Doug from terror in blinding agony. Before any of us could find the scrap of calm needed to dial 911, Doug's mom let out a violent spasm. Then, without warning, she fell still. The last frames of the Zoom call were Doug, standing over his mom's still and smoking body, pleading with her to wake up. I liked Doug's mom. She was like an aunt to me. I'm glad I didn't have to see any more of her post-SHM than those thin, nearly fleshless ankles. I haven't seen what SHM did to a person in full yet. I wouldn't have to wait long. Within a week, it'd be on the front page of both the local Tribune and Herald. At the time, though, all I could do was sit in lockdown isolation and ruminate, robbing myself of sleep for days, trying to make any kind of sense out of what the hell I'd just seen. That was my first brush with SHM. We were locked down, so I couldn't get to Doug. By the time the COVID quarantines finished, he'd been sent off to some institution. That's how Grant and I knew we had to keep our mouths shut. Doug didn't, you see. He was very vocal about what he saw, and even more vocal about how spontaneous human malnutrition was a load of crap. Doug knew he was being lied to, and so did we. We didn't have the anger of losing our friggin' mom to drive us, though. I think that's why Doug took a different approach. He didn't think sleuthing would get him anywhere. Answers need to be taken, not found, he'd said. We tried to stop him, but once he got the idea to set fire to a police station in his head, there was no getting it out. Yeah, 2020 was definitely one of those years for me. Anyway, as I said, Doug's mom was the third victim, and it wasn't until the fifth or sixth that the media started connecting dots. There was nothing about the vibrating, of course. That seemed to be held kept deliberately under wraps. What led local newscasters to connect the occurrences was the apparent containment within our town and the, how shall I put this, unique state the victims are found in. It's from the victims that the SHM lie was created. You won't find any info on it. I know this because I'm not stupid. One of the first things I did when the disappearances started was liaise with my out-of-town contacts. The only SHM info online is on the webpages of local schools, hospitals, community centers, etc. Try and access any of these from an IP out of the country? 404'd, my friends. Try and get around that with a VPN? SWAT time. Only took two reports of that in our paranormal investigation Discord for Grant and me to realize we were completely alone. Everyone wants to help until helping means an armed unit at the door. But what is the SHM lie? The clue is in the name. Spontaneous. Because it happens suddenly and without any prior warning. There's no rhyme or reason to who gets picked or when. Oldest victim was in their 80s. Youngest was young enough that there are too many first graders around here familiar with funerals. Some go in their sleep. Others, like Doug's mom, when they're humdrumming through their daily grind. There's no sign it's coming either. Well, that we know of at least. It wasn't like any of the victims were around to recount what they had experienced in the lead-up. Whatever happens, it happens suddenly. Nobody reported feeling unwell prior to getting SHM'd. They're fine one second, buzzing so hard they're dangerous to touch the next. The human part is obvious. It's the M in SHM, the malnutrition. That's the biggest part of the lie. A local doctor coined the term based on the state the victims were left in after the deadly superconvulsions. No matter their size beforehand, every SHM victim came out the other end looking, well, malnourished. Extremely malnourished. The kind of malnourished that the term 0% body fat was made for. They showed a couple photos on the news and in the papers, like I said. Pictures that all came with a disclaimer that sensitive viewers would find them distressing. Apparently, we're all sensitive viewers when it comes to SHM, even the local news anchors. It's a shame, actually, that the internet blacklisting means the clip of 76 News host Chip Dallas bursting into tears live on air won't make it to YouTube. Despite the grim context, it's still pretty funny to see such a corny POS lose their crap so bad. We didn't think it was funny at the time, though, of course. Took a few days of emotional distance before we found enough teenage edginess to force a laugh at his blubbering. Mainly because it meant we both had to lie about the fact that we'd been crying, too. It's the eyes that do it. Nothing prepares you for them. Even in a photograph. When you hear about something called spontaneous human malnutrition, you expect to see rib cages. You expect to see bones and joints sticking out at odd angles, draped in a sheet-thin layer of near-translucent skin that leaves nothing of the anatomy within to imagination. As harrowing as seeing those peeled-back lips, those teeth sticking up jagged and crooked from shriveled gums can be, you're not blindsided by them. The sight of their distended bellies is haunting, sure, but if you've ever seen what normal malnutrition looks like, then you're not in unfamiliar territory. The severity of it will take you back, no doubt. Being able to see every crease and fold of a person's lower intestine is jarring, even if you're given a heads up, after all. Despite your shock, though, these things won't create any kind of cognitive dissonance for you. They're about on par with what your brain will conjure when you read the phrase, "died of starvation." The eyes, though. No amount of disclaimers or trigger warnings could prep you enough for the eyes. The first thing off was the look of the face surrounding them. Every single SHM victim I've seen had the same expression. Terror. Complete and utter terror. All of them died screaming. The eyeballs themselves are far, far worse, though. Unnatural. No disease can do that. And I know because Grant and I researched it for weeks. It doesn't matter what color your eyes are before SHM. When you come out of the other end of it, they'll be black. Not black like coal, or like ink or shadow. Black like the darkest reaches of deep space. The kind of black that absorbs all light, so nothing twinkles or shimmers in them. You've seen a shark's eye, right? Imagine them, but 1,000 times darker. That's why everyone watching Chip Dallas's 76 News special on the mysterious new disease that had so far taken 6 people was crying, screaming, or laughing uncontrollably. Not everyone lapped up the disease lie, though. It's a small town, but it's not that small. We've got 2 high schools. Grant and I were far from the only ones who saw spontaneous human malnutrition for the crap it was. You know what they say about the truth, though. A lie can hold it down and beat the crap out of it before it even knows it's in a fight. Doug was the first non-believer to get, as we were told, sent away. He tried to burn down a police station, though. When they took him, we weren't at all surprised. It wasn't until Brian Jarek's quote-unquote suicide that Grant and I realized just how far the mayor, police, government, military, whoever, was prepared to go to keep everything covered up. It was 6 months after the first SHM case, so that's about 102 confirmed deaths for context. At the regular nightly vigils, the townsfolk would say nothing with their lips, but everything with their furtive glances and nervous floor fixations. Brian Jarek was a local podcaster. Before SHM, he talked mainly about nature trails in the closest national park, or shows that were coming through one of the 3 theaters we boasted. As the SHM epidemic unfolded, this all changed. Brian saw through the crap too, and he was very vocal about it. He had the balls to ask questions on his podcast. Grant and I would only whisper to each other in our quiet corner of the cafeteria. If it's a disease, then where's the CDC? Why hasn't this gained national or international attention? What kind of disease turns your eyes like that? Where does all the body mass they've lost go? How can they vibrate so fast it sands down wood, but they remain physically unscathed? Why hasn't it spread outside the boundaries of our town? Why aren't the death certificates public? How come their clothes look ragged and old by the time they stop moving? Brian became a firebrand, a preacher voicing the doubts we all shared, the questions so many of us had but were all too afraid to ask. He'd known they were coming for him too. You can probably guess the story. Night before his suicide, he abjectly stated that he would under no circumstances commit suicide. When the first guy to point this out on Facebook was reported dead an hour later, the message had become pretty clear. After that, pretty much every public doubter and worried citizen kept their mouths shut. Grant and I didn't accept it, though. We couldn't. It wasn't a disease. We didn't know what it was, but we knew that there was no such thing as spontaneous human malnutrition. We were being lied to, and unless we could figure out why, we wouldn't be safe. We both begged our respective parents to move out of town, but you can imagine how that went down. Grant's dad told him to stop being a pussy. Mine sat me down and gave me a lecture on the importance of not running from your problems. Both of them, and our moms, brought into the SHM lie. I'm not going to lie. So heavy was my sense of helplessness that I cried myself to sleep most nights after that one. If it weren't for Grant, the sense of isolation, that feeling of being the only sane one in the nut house, would have broken me. Grant's not me. He's made of tougher stuff. Whereas I retreated into existential despair, Grant decided Brian Jarek's death as the catalyst to get up and get stuff done. That's why he was the one that managed to gather the puzzle pieces and put them together. It took him a little while, though. A few months and several dozen more bodies happened. Before the morning, he arrived at my door with a cardboard box full of laptops. I still remember his expression as clear as day. He was the phrase, "I've done it," personified. But where his wide grin wore the phrase triumphantly, his eyes bore it with guilt, shame, and fear. He made me help him carry the box up to my room to dump the dozen or so old laptops onto my bed. I had to run through every variation of what the hell that I knew before he spewed a rambling, near breathless explanation. He'd started with the footage recorded from our D&D session. He'd been planning to keep it as a surprise, but he'd been recording them to put together an animated highlight reel for Doug's birthday. I was a little annoyed at the invasion of privacy at first, but more irate that Grant had kept this SHM clue from me. After a brief and admittedly genuine apology, Grant opened up one of the laptops. He pulled a USB drive out of his pocket and plugged it in. When I asked why he hadn't just used my PC, if he had the clip on a thumb drive, he muttered something about not wanting to buy me a new monitor. I understood exactly what he meant once he played me the clip. This probably is no shock to any of you, but the 3-minute snippet was of the end of our final D&D session. It was the video of Doug's mom dying. It wasn't raw footage, though. Grant had edited it. Specifically, he'd slowed it down to a tenth of the original speed. The 3-minute clip represented only about 20 seconds of real-time footage. It was enough. Grant had found all we needed to prove SHM was a hokum made-up bullcrap disease to cover up something else happening. Despite what you're thinking, it didn't feel like a victory. I've never felt worse about being proved right. The something else was so far outside the realms of my explanation that trying to understand what I was watching literally gave me a migraine. All I remember thinking when the clip finished was that I'd give anything to wake up in a reality where I'd been wrong. Once more, I was watching Doug standing over his mom in his kitchen. He was moving at super slow speeds, as to be expected. She wasn't. She was still shaking, but it was shaking now, not blur-inducing vibrations. Her speed was still faster than it should have been, but thanks to Grant's editing, we could see what she was actually doing down there. She was writhing, kicking, flexing every joint in her body with jolting spasms that bent them into contortionist-like angles. To my disgust, I realized that what I thought was the natural crack and pop of slowed audio was actually the snapping and crunching of bones and cartilage. More than once, she'd twist into a position that showed more than just her ankles. We saw her legs, saw the flesh on them shrink away in a matter of seconds. We'd catch glimpses of her hands, of the skin around her digits vacuum sealing the bones so tightly that fingernails splintered and cracked. Only once did we see her face. It was one time too many. She'd spasmed forward, folding inward without warning until her temples touched her toes. Her eyes were. They were burning. Bright green flames poured from her sockets, the black orbs at their center bubbling and sputtering with intense heat. The skin of her face was pulled so tight that pulsing veins around her eyes seemed to dance and writhe above the skin. She was screaming, too. Screaming with such force that the windpipe in her shrinking neck bulged and her wilting tonsils bled. Her jaw was open long past that point that it should have dislocated. That's when I realized what the weird audio spike had been when I'd seen the footage months earlier, when it was live and at normal speed. It was Doug's mom's screams, sped up so fast they sounded like microphone feedback. With the footage slowed down, it was clearly audible. Garbled and distorted, sure, but there was no mistaking the stretched, tiny shrieks cascading from the laptop speaker. It wasn't a scream of fear, but of pain. Unrestrained, unreserved agony. It was when Doug started to bend over in super slow motion that my stomach dropped. I remembered his fingers, the power sander sound that reminded me of Freddy Gruber's elbow in sixth grade. With the footage slowed, Doug's attempts to save his mother sounded nothing like a power sander. It sounded like lightning. The moment the tips of his fingers were within 6 or so inches of the top of her head, there was an almighty crack, a booming thunder so loud that the speaker screamed for a few seconds before falling silent. Twin streams of emerald flame leaped from Doug's mom's boiling, hissing eyes the moment the hardware killing noise hit. The green fire wrapped around Doug's slow-motion fingers. The moment they made contact, the flesh of his digits curled and split, falling away in fluttering shreds that cascaded back towards his mom's black hole eyes. Within a few seconds, there was nothing left but bone, and before long, that too was lost in the bubbling voids. Doug had pulled his hand away quickly, so I knew he didn't lose more than a few fingers. Still, the tension caused by watching him from our slowed perspective, holding his hand in that acid-like green burning, had made me grind my teeth so hard that I lost a filling. The relief I felt when he finally pulled his hand away was short-lived, however. The worst of Grant's discovery was yet to come. That's the moment that they arrived. I can't describe them to you because I've not actually seen them. Neither has Grant. That's the thing, though. You can't. The way you can't see them, though, that I can describe real clear, even though thinking about it too long makes me so queasy that I nearly puke. I didn't notice them at first. They started small, three clusters of fuzzy darkness hovering at Doug's feet. Within a few frames, though, they were all as tall as his knees and wider as he was. In other words, impossible to ignore. The panic riding my breathing grew louder and louder as the three beings unfurled. Once materialized at their full height, they were easily 6 foot tall, the very peaks of the conical heads brushing the ceiling of Doug's mom's lofty rustic kitchen. At first I thought they were dark, shadowy, the same intense blackness that, left the eyes of every single victim. That's when Grant reached forward, paused the video, and minimized the window. I stared at the generic desktop wallpaper, my jaw falling open and closed. I sputtered, trying to get words out. All my mouth could find was shrill, nonsensical gibberish. The three figures were still there. The pixels of their forms weren't displaying darkness. They were dead. I peered down to look closer. Sure enough, the black light of the screen was completely gone where the figure stood. The pixels at the edge of the silhouette, the ones that should have been displaying the clear blues and greens of a rolling hill, flickered and glitched. They cycled through every color visible to the naked eye. Not to mention some that shouldn't have been. Although please don't ask me to elaborate on this, because if I think too much about it, it literally triggers an epileptic fit. No teenage hyperbole. It was at this point that Grant started frantically booting up the rest of the laptops. On the screens of every single one were three identical clusters of dead pixels, outlined by a maddening, razor-thin spectrum of maddening color. Whatever these things were, capturing their likeness and displaying it digitally was too much for man-made electronics. Grant proved this by showing me his phone, which he'd used to film one of the laptops, while it played the video. There on his home screen were three miniature clusters of lightless pixels with conical heads, figures that aligned perfectly with the aforementioned video when he tapped it open with his thumb a few seconds later. I was babbling and shaking by this point. There were more than a few tears, let's put it that way. Grant wasn't done yet, though. The clip still wasn't finished. The last 20 seconds of the clip were of the three figures towering over Doug. They didn't move, but I could tell they must have been doing something behind their shroud of pixel death. I know for two reasons. I'll get through the least harrowing of them first, because for the second I need to build myself up a little. The first reason I knew the conical-headed giants were there for a reason was Doug's mom. She was convulsing more violently than ever. Her spasms were rocketing her from the floor so hard that she seemed to almost be floating toward the three dark masses. Well, perhaps pulled toward them is more appropriate. Pulled by her bubbling, boiling black hole eyes. The green flames had once more leapt from them. This time, though, there were three tendrils of fire. And thankfully, none of them found Doug. Instead, they snaked their way through the air until they each found a mass of pixel death. The flames disappeared behind their respective voids, and to my growing horror, I realized they were at the exact height one would expect to find on a non-foot conical-headed being, a mouth. The arcs of green fire kept Doug's mom and the dead pixel figures connected until almost the very end of the clip. Her convulsions grew more violent and contorting than ever. Her skin rippled as the final ounces of fat, muscle, and mass were sucked into these void-filled orbs to be burned into green flames. Every vein on her face bulged to bursting point. Her mouth twisted into a teeth-baring grimace from which streaks of foam oozed. Doug stood above his mom, still slow motion and oblivious, as the three towering beings around him consumed her, until she was little more than an abyss-eyed skeleton draped in papery skin. As I said, though, it was the first of the two reasons I knew those beings must have been doing something beneath those lifeless pixels. The second one, the one that's kept me up for however many nights have passed since that morning, was much worse. I could hear them. Not through the speaker. The speaker was dead and busted. This was made all too apparent by the fact that Doug's mom's electric chair convulsions and screaming from burning eyes had been inaudible since Doug made the mistake of trying to touch her. No. I could hear them in the room. From all around me, their hollow tones echoed and bounced off every wall. I yelled, whipping around in every direction, adrenaline shooting through every blood vessel. Grant was crying now, crying and mouthing "I'm sorry" over and over like a twisted mantra. It wasn't just the fact that I could hear them, which made me throw the laptop out the damn window. It was what I could hear them doing, too. They were laughing. All three of them were locked in high-pitched, chittering hysterics, the kind of laughter you imagine a spider makes before it injects its cocooned prey with chemicals that turn them into liquid mulch. Every barked ha screeched through my eardrums, twisting my spine and setting off every nervous tick I never knew I had. I shouted at Grant for about half an hour, once I was satisfied the laptop hadn't survived the fall. He took it like a champ, and when I'd finally calmed down, he showed me the bloodied knuckles he'd obtained when he put his fist through drywall after watching it the first time. The fear it created was beyond rationality. Hearing that laughter set off something deep within me, a set of emotions long dormant thanks to the comfortable safety of modern life. Once upon a time, human beings needed that mix of aggression and panic. They needed it because, if they didn't have it, they'd never be able to fight their way out of the corners the beings that live in shadows could back them into. I know those feelings now, although every single part of me wishes that I didn't. It was after I apologized for losing my cool and Grant began to talk about our options for what to do next that our phones rang. I felt a little composure and I'd managed to build since the laptop went flying ebb away in an instant. There was no number, but instead of caller not recognized or withheld number, the writing on the screen showed two simple, spirit-crushing words. Human phone. I looked up at Grant, tears once more falling down my cheeks. He was in the same state. He nodded at me and I gulped, resigning myself to whatever happened next. We both clicked the green icon to accept the call. A single voice answered, and once more it came not from our phones, but from every square inch of space around us. It was a single voice, whining and high-pitched. The syllables sounded not like organic speech, but like someone had stretched and manipulated audio of billions of people, screaming until it became coherent language. Again, only two words, but they were enough for both Grant and I to get on our bikes and cycle as far away from my house as we possibly could. Hello, boys. My folks were the ones who reported us missing. They found us hiding in our shack in the woods. That one we'd naively believed our parents didn't know about. It was when we started to explain why we ran that crap went sideways fast. We'd expected the cops not to believe us. We never thought they'd place us under house arrest and cut both our houses off from the internet. We were both dumbfounded when they confiscated our phones and told us every device we owned was getting taken in for evidence. We were real surprised when one of the cops punched Grant in the face and told us, in no uncertain terms, that just because we were kids didn't mean we couldn't get, and I quote, dealt with. When I found out about the bribe money to keep Stumm, I don't know what I felt more. Shocked at how much it was, or disgusted that my parents accepted it. They don't believe me, by the way. They're pissed that we tried to leave town at, and again I quote, but from my dad now, a time when the community needs to come together and not do anything to rock the boat. And that was a week ago. I haven't slept since. I also haven't heard from Grant. I've been watching the news, though. 17 more gone in the last 5 days. 17 more people burned away and consumed by whatever those things are. And our police, at the very least, are in on it. Keeping it covered up. Not just keeping it covered up. Allowing it to happen. I know it runs deeper, though. It has to. Why else would those scientists in hazmat suits keep showing up outside my house at night? Why else would a black van be parked across the street morning, noon, and night? Why else would 3 police officers resign due citing a conflict of conscience and die under mysterious circumstances the night afterward? Whatever's happening in my town, it's big and it's being kept quiet. Not only kept quiet, it's being allowed to happen. I stole my dad's work phone to post this. I'm hoping that it gets out there, that it makes it past the blacklist they've got in place. That's part of the reason I've omitted the name of where I actually live. They'll no doubt have scrapers mining every search engine for it. I mean, damn, it probably won't work, but I'm plumb out of ideas and honestly, way beyond desperate by this point. This isn't a send help now post because the help is half the damn problem. This is so you can be on the alert. If you get wind of anything that sounds even remotely like SHM, skip town. Leave. Especially if you live in a pokey little cult-like quiet town like mine. I don't care what you think of your neighbors. Forget everything you know about your friends, your family. When crap hits the fan, they will play along with the lie. As I said, this doesn't seem to have spread beyond the town's limits so far. Whatever those beings are, they've picked here as their hunting ground. They could move, though. Or there could be more of them. Who knows how many ghost towns and dwindling populations are actually whole communities being deliberately fed to these things. The U.S. is a big place. You really think anyone would notice if Podunkville and Shitheap County vanished slowly over a few years? That's what's happening here. And nobody around me is trying to stop it. My parents, the news, the police, the mayor, everyone with any kind of authority are doing what they can to make sure we sit tight and let it happen. There's no such thing as spontaneous human malnutrition. There never has been, and there never will be. But because the idiots around me refuse to stop insisting otherwise, I'm going to get consumed by... No. Screw it. Screw the house arrest. I can't stay here. Those things know who I am. Know where I am. They'll be coming for me sooner or later. House arrest be damned. I've got nowhere to go, but... Damn, that footage? Dying alone and starving in the forest would be much better than... that. Dad. If you're reading this, I'm sorry. I don't want to know what it feels like to have eyes that burn like dying suns. I'm not going out the way Doug's mom did. The way I know you're hiding from me that Grant already has done. I can't take this madness anymore, Dad. You know I'm right about all this. I'm sorry. I truly am. But you and I both need to accept that it's not my fault you decided to fall down this rabbit hole. As for the rest of you, wish me luck. You might see me cycling through your town one day. Who knows? I'm posting this, then hitting the road. It's about an hour's journey between my house and the edge of town. If I push it, I can make it before my dad or the cops realize what I've done. I'm taking a risk by posting this, I know, but that's the thing. There's always a chance those things might reach me first. Hell, they might even be reading this now. They've already proved they can mess with our phones. It won't be a stretch if they were watching me type this right. No. I can't think like that. Gotta focus. Gotta remember that as risky as leaving is, the risk of staying is always higher. It's a certainty. I'm going to be keeping my head down so you won't hear from me again. But keep your fingers crossed for me. Please. Oh, and remember, if and when your local Chip Dallas... A simile starts telling you not to worry about a mysterious new disease called spontaneous human malnutrition. Don't believe a word they say. It doesn't exist, and you have every reason to panic.
Get ready for the smartest bundle in streaming. 6 streaming services for the intellectually curious. Featuring Curiosity Stream with the best collection of documentary films and TV shows. Psalm TV and great stories from the world of wine. Taste Made for the fun side of food and travel. Topic with the best thrillers and crime stories. And so much more. From nature to history, technology to food, mystery to adventure. Get 6 streaming services for one low price. At less than $6 a month, it's the best deal in streaming. Learn more and sign up now at smartbundle.com.